Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. So I'm excited today, as always, like every other episode, because I'm always fired up. But today, I've got another awesome Thrive co-host. And to clarify here, this is Thrive Make Money Matter. This is an event beyond any other event that I've ever attended. This year was my first time attending it, its second year. It'll be back again in 17 for its third year in San Diego. And I met a lot of powerful people at this event. So I'm actually very excited for this co-host because I think he left a bigger impact than anybody else that I really met at this event. And this gentleman is a professional speaker. He's been around the block when it comes to stage and presentation and communicating to people of all walks of life. But he's also got a little bit of an expertise in love and relationships and helping us dig deeper into who we are. And I'm excited to really bring that to the forefront today because I think that's key with lifestyle. And we talk about that on the show about, you know, fueling your health, your business, your lifestyle. And I think he's going to be really tie those domains together for us today. And more importantly, I also want to call out the fact that if you've ever heard of this online kind of crowdfunding type of fundraising by an organization called Pencils of Promise, they've gotten very famous. If you haven't heard of it, well, consider this your heads up because this guy is an up-and-coming leader when it comes to showing people how to actually build schools by raising money and helping fund education. And we're going to talk more about that today too. So without further ado, I'm going to bring this guy on. His name is PJ Dixon. Welcome to the show.
What up? What up?
There
he
is.
I'm super stoked to be here. I cannot wait. Scott, I love you, brother. This is a huge honor, and it's a thrill to reconnect with you on this level for you.
Dude, I feel guilty because we haven't reconnected sooner, but I know you're such a hustler, and you've been out there just getting it done. I'm like, and I'm trying to catch up to you. So it's like, dude, I'm just excited, man, that we actually were able to make this happen before the new year.
Well, then apparently if you're really trying to catch up, you got to get a wheelchair too and get on top of a hill.
Dude, you're too fast, man.
A lot faster, man, downhill.
You could cruise in that thing, man.
Dude, yeah, downhill works really well. Uphill, a little bit slower, you know, a little bit slower. I'm looking for some help.
Well, and it's funny because you say that, but then when we were at the event, like myself and Cole Hatter, the founder of Thrive Make Money Matter, and a few other people who knew you really, really well, were like, we're trying to get around. There's just so many people hustling around that event in San Diego. And I'd be like, hey, man, I could just, you know, take you over there. And you're like, no, I got it. So dude, even though you kind of joked around about that, I'm like, this guy's pretty independent. He's got it. And I don't know how you did you have the wheels designed that way so you can do your forearm technique to get that quick spin? Because the first time I saw you just whip that thing around, I'm like, man, he's got this down.
No, you know what? I have a very rare form of muscular dystrophy that was actually supposed to take my life by the age of 7. And I turned 47 in 2016. So I've lived 40 years longer than Boom. I was expected to. But despite like that and my disability and the progressive nature of my disability, which means that I have continually gotten weaker, I just use a regular manual wheelchair, something that I can reach with my forearms because I don't have the strength in my shoulders to lift my arms anymore. So I literally have to fling my body, like twist my body fairly quickly and fling my forearm up onto my wheel. And then I lean forward to get it to move, But, you know, I've been training in martial arts for 27, 28 years, something like that. And, so in that time period, you know, you develop a couple of skills. Plus, I used to play wheelchair sports, and so I don't know if I'm really that quick. Certainly not as quick as I used to be, but you know, maybe quick enough that I can hold my own.
Well, I could definitely tell when I first saw your mastery of navigation. I'll just call it that. I was like, man, that guy is like kind of like a part-time contortionist too, because yes. The way you contort and maneuver your body. And again, for the listeners, it's really hard to explain this. So real quick, I mean, if you guys really want to find out who PJ is, go ahead and hit pause once you guys are listening to this episode and go to PJ's wisdom.com and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. I mean, PJ, how do you get into martial arts, by the way, that we're throwing that in? Because that's something you and I have in common. I tried my attack at like basketball and baseball, being a tall kid and stuff like that, and just things didn't click. And I got into martial arts when I was probably 13, 14, studied it till about college age, and then life got in the way and I just didn't stick to it. And it was still one of my most favorite, really life-changing sports because it really got me channeled and focused. So,
what did you study? What did you study?
Shōin-Ryu.
Oh, right.
So it was
okay.
an Okinawan-based karate. Yeah. So, and it was literally like probably 20-minute drive from where I live now over here because I live in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and the dojo was in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. So we have a lot of religious-sounding cities here because Nazareth and Bethlehem are right next to each other.
Well, you might need that. So yeah. That's probably good for you. martial arts, man, is pretty cool. So just a kind of a quick explanation when Scott's talking about me being kind of a contortionist. I have a pretty severe curvature of my spine. So if you think about sitting down and you're just sitting in a chair, and if you think about like leaning forward, so your abdomen or your stomach is resting in your lap, and then you arch your back and bring from your lower spine, just a couple vertebrae above your pelvis bone, and you like literally arch your back and bring your body from your lower rib cage up, straight back up, you know, so, you know, you're upright as if you're standing. That's what I look like on a regular basis. And so I had to develop something like that so that I could get my forearms on my wheelchair because I was unwilling to stop pushing a manual wheelchair and go to an electric. So I'm not interested in an electric wheelchair as long as I can continue to push my manual. So just so that everybody has kind of a clear idea of what I look like. And so as far as martial arts goes, right, like I can't lift my arms, my fingers don't close anymore. I lost all that capacity literally overnight in 2001. And so when all of that left, like I had to figure out a new way to do martial arts because I couldn't use my arms anymore. Of course, I've never been able to use my arms very much in martial arts anyway. I use a lot of movement of my upper torso from my waist up to the top of my head, like pulling people off balance, changing the direction that they think that they're moving in, and then pulling them again in a different direction. And by pulling, that means like I might be wrapping my head and my neck around their arm, or changing the angle that they're punching me at by moving. So, you know, you find a way. Like if there's something you want to do, you know, you just find a way. And that's just kind of the truth of my life. I was raised with this attitude of if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Like literally, I was supposed to only live until I was 7. I've jumped out of planes. I've done indoor skydiving, aqua jetpacking.
You've done the aqua jetpack. Come on. I'm jealous.
Now look, like half the stuff I'm strapped to somebody else, but I'm still finding a way to do it, right?
Yeah, but again, the point is what you just said there is you're actually still doing it. Like I get frustrated when I have to go do tandem skydiving because I haven't committed to one of those full blown training programs. So they don't let you jump solo unless you go through the training program. So like I really can't complain because in your case, just out of safety, you have to be tied to somebody for a tandem type jump. Or was the Aquajet also a tandem type setup?
Yeah, it was. I would love to figure out a way to do that. They've got a couple of different things right now. Some really new technology. There's a footboard, and they've got a new jet surfboard. And I'm planning on surfing this year. I love surfing.
Nice.
I always have. So I'm planning on surfing. They've got these jet boards, which are pretty badass. I'm pretty stoked about that. And so, yeah, I have to go tandem, but you know what? It is still the same activity. I would love to be able to control things myself. And that's why I'm looking at different opportunities like the jet board. That looks super duper fun. Something that I think I can do, independently. And so I'm also looking at, I forget the name of the company right now, but I'm looking at mountain boarding also, you know, the skateboards that are kind of a little bit longer because that's
they got like the all terrain tires mounted on like basically a giant, it's not a traditional skateboard. It's like the longboard almost. Right.
Yeah. They're longboards that, people usually take down mountains.
Yeah. Like big knobby tires. It's crazy.
Right. I know. Well, the big knobby tires, I think we're looking at maybe something a little bit different when you're talking probably mountainside.
Okay.
Right, and I'm talking like road, like street racing down.
Oh, you're talking about going down the mountain, like the roads, like, oh God, I hiked that mountain because you're in Tucson, Arizona, Mount Lemmon.
Yeah, Mount Lemmon.
Yeah, that road. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've rode
that. So I'm looking at stuff like that. Now, don't get me wrong, the mountain boarding that you're talking about is really interesting for me also. I just haven't gotten into that as much yet.
Well, hey, man, you're tackling one adventure at a time, so.
Yeah, I've been really lucky, you know. And so the real point is that despite the fact that I can or can't do things completely independently, I still find a way to be able to experience it, like the Aqua Jetpacking. One of the coolest things about that, and I would love to be able to do it independently, but one of the coolest things about that was that the guy who was my instructor was a former Navy diver. Well, actually, I think he's still a Navy diver, and he just does this on weekends. And so he said that he had never had as much fun with anybody as he had with me, because he was able to stabilize it, and I was able to kind of move my head a little bit and control the jetpack a little bit. And then he was able to actually do some of the dolphin dives. I think they call it something else, but I call it like a dolphin dive, where you pop out of the water and then you go head first in the water and underneath and pop up again out of the water.
I've seen the videos so many times. Fun. Yeah. Like they kind of like shoot straight up and then they kind of dip and do a dive. Yeah. And you got like that kind of like an S formation on a horizontal under the water, back out again. I know exactly what you're talking about. That's cool. So you can actually aid with that process with the way you're strapped on.
Well, I was aiding with the process when we're, in essence, like levitating above the water, like forced up. So we're, you know, maybe 15 or 20 feet up. And then he would get us stabilized. And once we were stabilized, he would say, okay, like lean into it. So when I would lean into it, I could spin us. And then lean the other way and I could spin us the other way. So that was pretty cool. But the dolphin dive was definitely 100% him. I was just along for the ride.
That's freaking awesome. And when was the first time you did that?
I don't know, maybe like June of last year.
Okay.
It was pretty fun. I don't know if you remember Nick Unsworth or not. Nick Unsworth was my first business coach. And one of the cool things that Nick did with his business coaching was he would, every time we had a mastermind, we would do something really, really cool. You know, like one time we did trapezing, another time we did aqua jetpacking. And this is something like I'm setting up my own retreats now, and I love the retreat idea, because we really get to delve deeply into, you know, the different things that I'm teaching, spirituality being one of them, mindset being another. And one of the things that's important to me is also incorporating some sense of physicality and overcoming our fears. So, you know, my retreats, we do things like zip lining, indoor skydiving, you know, these kinds of things, because I want people to also experience things that they don't normally experience.
Right.
So, in fact, I'll be, what are we, like December 26th, today's actually my dad's birthday. Well, would be my dad's birthday. I lost him a few months ago, but today's my dad's birthday. And then next week, I'm actually ziplining for the very first time, which is exciting. So we'll be ziplining as long as like 1,400 feet, I think. And I think we're like 200 feet up. So it's going to be scary. Like, people are like, why do you do that? That's crazy. And I'm like, because it scares me and I don't want to be afraid. Like, I really want to be free. And that's why I do these things. I want other people to be free too. Sometimes people say, well, dude, like, why don't you just get an electric wheelchair so you can push or like save some energy? And there's about 100 reasons why I don't, one of which is because if I quit, then you can quit, and I don't want you to quit. So that means I keep pushing my chair, I keep struggling so that you go, wow, at least my day is not that bad, right? And like, my day's not bad, but it's all a matter of perspective, the way people decide to look at me and then reflect how they look at themselves. And so I'm going to continue to push a manual wheelchair as long as I possibly can, and I'm going to continue to jump out of planes and indoor skydive and surf and travel different countries in the world and all of that, because I want to challenge myself as much as possible so that that inspires other people to do the same thing. If you're afraid to really live the life that you were given, then let's break through that. Let's find a way to liberate you from that.
You know, I love that message, because I think that's what so many people nowadays, like, they're always like, we're all talking about it. There's a lot of social media, YouTube content, Facebook Live content. Now, everybody out there is trying to be a coach, a mentor, et cetera. And I think that's part of the big picture is we need to embrace our fears, right? We need to embrace the challenges that so many people feel trapped behind. And I think that's something that you're embodying through and through, man. Like, you're not letting, pardon the term, handicap, but a hindrance hold you back. Right. Like, you've done more than most people with who are not bound to a wheelchair. And I love that. And like, I can connect with you, because I lost a cousin years ago. He was, you know, played football when he was in school. We talked a little briefly about this out of Thrive, but it wasn't MD or it wasn't MS. It was Lou Gehrig's disease. So And
which is a form of muscular dystrophy, actually. It falls under the
it's under that umbrella?
The Pantheon, yeah.
Okay. See, and again, you're teaching me something, because I dug into it more. I wore the bracelets. I did fundraising. And, you know, the guy became from being a strong Irish guy, you know, with my bloodline, Mulvaney, to just the guy shrunk up and eventually was bound to the wheelchair and then eventually needed breathing assistance and everything else. And just the debilitation of that illness, I kind of wished I was able to go back and help influence more of his lifestyle and get him to do more of the things that, you know, you're doing. And that I think you're setting a great example that way, is you're not letting stuff like that hold you back. You're living life to the fullest. And that's powerful.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And that's really important for me, because that's my real message, right? My message is seek not to love more, but to remove the obstacles that separate you from love. And we can change that word love to seek not to do more in your life, but to remove the obstacles that are separating you from doing more, so that you can actually live the life that you want freely and easily. So don't live in a state of constant resistance, is what I'm talking about, right? Don't constantly try to do something and struggle and I'm trying to figure out. Don't do that. Let's figure out what's stopping you from being that way, usually our mindset. And then once we're able to adjust the mindset, then everything else in your life starts to come about really freely and easily. We don't have to fight in life. We get to live life with life, and we are the directors of the outcome of our experience. And so how do you want to live? What kind of experience do you want to have? And if you start asking yourself that, and then you say, okay, well, what's stopping me? Okay, now we've got a conversation. Because it doesn't really matter what you want to do until you figure out what's stopping you. Once you figure out what's stopping you or causing you hesitation or pause, then we can adjust that. Then everything else starts to open up freely. And life is supposed to be about freedom. Fear doesn't help us for the most part.
Well, and you're
it can be a benefit. Go ahead. Yeah, go.
You're hitting on a powerful point here, and I don't want to lose that energy. You're talking about freedom. And you're talking about, and something that's powerful that I kind of mentioned on your intro that you and I talked about, which is, you know, you're kind of become, let's go ahead and say, you've become an expert in love and relationships. Because when I saw the power of your expression and your connectability at Thrive, I mean, it was powerful, man. Like the confidence and the manliness of you being able to honestly just cry out of passion on stage. You know, when we helped you nail that goal of hitting your first tier for Pencils of Promise and stuff like that, it's like, dude, I was crying. I mean, I think three quarters of the audience was fighting it back. And admittedly, like, you know, I grew up old school farmer boy, you know, Irish heritage. And I joked around about it on the episode that I put out this morning. Was my first ever solo episode about gratitude during the holiday season. And this was, I mean, I think it was inspired really because the other night I watched a documentary movie on minimalism. Mm. And I'm seeing people post all these photos of like massive quantities of presents under the tree and how much money they spend on this stuff. And I'm like, dude, it's so much bigger than that, man. Like, and I wanted to dig more into that piece of love and relationships, because that was a weakness of mine. And that's something that I have committed to build out at a bigger level in myself, because I've realized that I wasn't, all these years I've used that quote, live life to the fullest. That's from Ernest Hemingway. And it's one of the inspiring quotes that powered me to create Live the Fuel, because Live the Fuel stands for Live the Fired Up Epic Life. And it was inspired from Yeah, man. It was inspired from that Live the Fuel quote. I mean, Live the Fuel came from, you know, live life to the fullest, like people from history, like Ernest Hemingway, who got it and they understood it. And you're doing that for other people. And I want to dig into that more, because that's part of who you are. And like, how did you get to that point where you got so in touch with love and passion? I mean, I don't know, man. I need to dig into that. I need to understand more of that behind you, because I just don't know enough about you yet. And I want the audience to learn with me so we can truly understand PJ Dixon.
Well, thank you, brother. I really appreciate that. I'm really honored. And the truth is, that's why I was born. So I'm going to talk a little bit and interrupt me if you need to, because I'm going to say some things that it might take a little bit of time to get through, but it's important stuff. So I'm going to start in a way that I don't think I've ever started before. Okay.
Let's change it up. I love it.
Yeah. And I'm fortunate. I've been on a lot of podcasts and a lot of summits. So I don't think I've ever told this story before. And a lot of traditionals, and by traditionals, I mean traditional indigenous peoples from different you know, tribes or cultures around the world wouldn't do what I'm about to do. When I was born, I was what I'm about to do is like tell you my names, okay? Mm-hmm. And the reason that traditionals won't do this often is because that it gives away your power. But that's the whole point for me right now. Like, it's no good if I hoard it. It's all about giving. So when I was born, before I was born, I was called PJ. So I was always PJ since before I was born. But when I was born, I was named Paris James Custer the Fourth. Paris means lover. Okay, and James comes from the root Jacob, and Jacob means the planter or from underneath the foot, right? And so for me, this idea of Paris James is this idea of being born into a place of loving from the most humble of places. And a lot of cultures around the world, you don't show the bottom of your feet because they're usually dirty, and that's, you know, you keep the bottoms of your feet hidden as a way of kind of respecting the other people that are in the group that you're currently sitting with, right?
Okay.
And so for me, PJ, Paris James, comes from that supplanter, you know, or lifting up from below the foot, right? And so if Paris means love and my name was PJ working with both of these, then it says to me, this is the way I interpret it, that I love from the most humble of places. And that's who I really am from my very, very core, is that I love from the most humble of places. Well, then my mom got remarried when I was 3, and that man wanted to adopt me, and my mom and dad and myself, actually, I guess, decided on Paul Jason. And so Paul Jason, like, I didn't really have a choice. I was 3, man. Like, I literally, no lie, wanted pickle juice.
I was going to say, we don't really have a choice back then. It's like, whatever they roll with it, we get, right?
Yeah, it's crazy talk, right? So I was crazy. I wanted pickle juice or pajamas or something crazy like that. But so they named me Paul Jason. Well, Paul Jason means little healer. Okay, so we're still in line with the love, right? Well, then when I was 13, my dad put me out to quest. And questing, if you don't know what that is in traditional cultures around the world, it's a traditional way of allowing boys to go from boyhood to manhood. It's a rites of passage. So in essence, my dad walked me out into the woods and no wheelchair that I remember, and put me on the ground, and or I jumped down on the ground, and he said, come back a man, and he walked away. And he left me overnight in the woods at 13.
So now remember, is this tied to any kind of tribal heritage? Because I never really understood a lot of our native culture until I did the wildland firefighting thing, because I had, I think 3 different guys from 3 different tribes from all over the West. Might have been 4 now that I think about it. And I learned so much from each of them because each of their cultures were so much different. And I've heard of this quest before, and each of them do it a little bit differently, but it's very similar to this.
Mm-hmm. It is. And this happens all over the world. And women have their own form of changing ceremonies also, which I've been fortunate enough to dance in and actually sing in a little bit. This comes from the Lenni Lenape tribe. Or if people remember the movie Last of the Mohicans, Chief Chingachgook was kind of the tradition or culture that I was sort of studying with back in Ohio. And it does come from that. And so when I came back at 13, you know, I came back and they named me Tetongtititit Micheo Widi, which means little one with great heart. And then after that, when I moved out to Arizona to do some spiritual training, there's a gentleman who was tied to the Apache culture. And so I did some training with him. And when my teacher, my specific teacher, when the two of them put me out, they put me out again to quest. I was probably about 30 years old. And, you know, this is 17 years later and 2,000 miles apart. When I came back, they named me Jin Sha, which means all-encompassing heart or universal heart. That all-encompassing means universal. And so that's my name, Scott.
Wow.
My name is love, right? My name has always been love. And so this is not a story that I typically tell on a podcast or a summit, just because it just doesn't always seem the most relevant. But I mean, let's drop it.
This is so relevant, man. Like, you've developed so much meaning behind so many variations of your name, but in the end, like you just did for us, you summed it all up. And no matter what phase or definition shifted or changed, the core of all of that was love.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and to add to that, like, I'm going to give you a short version now. To add to that, when I moved out here to Arizona, my teacher said, hey, I want you to go and pray tonight and ask God what, you know, God wants you to do. And I said, okay, fine. So I prayed and I said, you know, God, I moved to Tucson and I'm not sure what the rest of my life is going to look like. You know, what do you want me to do? And I just got quiet. I just got still and I opened up and this pillar of golden light came through the ceiling, entered my head, filled up my entire body. And I heard one word, love. And I knew that in that moment that it didn't matter what I did. It mattered that I continued to love. Now, I've been a speaker since I was 7 years old, literally on stages, on radio shows, on television, like year after year after year, commercials. I've literally grown up in the public eye and speaking for, you know, my whole life, virtually my whole life. And so I was like, well, love, that's easy. Like, that's something I've been doing my whole life, loving other people. Sure, no problem. No, that's easy. Well, a couple of months later, I started having visions of, and you call them whatever you want, but I started having visions of being hit by a car at a bus stop. And so because I don't drive, I'm looking at, you know, oncoming traffic and I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm at the bus stop. Where do I sit? Do I sit behind the bus stand? Do I sit in front of it? How quickly can I jump out of my chair? You know, so I'm constantly
like kind of living in protection mode.
Totally. Absolutely. Being defensive, you know, because I thought, okay, well, if I'm having these visions repeatedly for 3 months. And so one night I was dropped off by some friends. And I had to walk a mile to get to my martial arts class. So she dropped me off, and then I started walking. And I had literally just walked by a bus stop. And I was walking towards oncoming traffic on the sidewalk. And I looked, and there was a big black SUV in front of me, but sort of off to my left, coming out of a, you know, kind of a chain restaurant. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And when he was looking to come out, he was looking to his left at oncoming traffic in the direction I was walking. So he didn't see me. I was basically behind him because he was looking off to his left. I looked at oncoming traffic and said, there's no possible way this guy's going to come out, forgetting completely about my vision. I walked out in front of him. He stepped on the gas and he gunned it and he hit me with his big black SUV, hit me on my left side, threw me out into three lanes of traffic.
Damn. Oh,
I
man.
I rolled. Yeah, as I'm flying through the air, I'm hearing my wheelchair crunch underneath his SUV. Literally got folded up and crushed. Didn't get folded because my chair doesn't fold. It got crushed and mangled under his SUV. In the air, I have time to say, God, please, whatever happens, please don't let him roll over my pelvis. I tuck and I roll on the concrete in front of these three lanes of traffic, and he comes to rest. His driver's side wheel comes to rest leaning against my pelvis.
Jesus.
2 more inches, he would have crushed my pelvis. Now, in that moment, there wasn't a single car accident. None of the cars hit me. They were all able to swerve around me. I don't know how, but, well, I do, because in retrospect, as I would meditate on that later, I saw an angel standing in each line of the traffic. Now, I don't expect your audience to believe what I saw or what I believe I saw, but I'm just telling you the story as it is. So here's where the story gets even more interesting. I wasn't expected to die that day. And why do I say that? Because in the restaurant was an EMT team who saw this happen. They came rushing out, picked me up, and took me across the street to the hospital. Like, I was literally right there across the street from the hospital.
Dude, my entire body just – I wish I had a photograph right now because, like, all the hair on my arm is standing up, man. This is ridiculous.
It's crazy, right? It's crazy. So for 4 months, I was in physical therapy, and they couldn't find what was wrong. Electric stim, pool therapy, stretching, massage, nothing worked. I was in pain. I couldn't sit on the toilet because it was a hard surface. I couldn't sit in the bottom of the shower because it was a hard surface. I couldn't sit up in my chair because, you know, the pain in my pelvis. I had so much pain in my pelvis. They x-rayed me as best as they possibly could, but because, you know, I'm curved up a little bit, it was hard for them to get me in the MRI machine or the x-ray machine or whatever it was, you know, so they did the best that they could. So they couldn't really see if anything was really legitimately broken, but they didn't think it was. So for 4 months, this physical therapist tried and tried and tried, and he's an amazing cat, like, but he couldn't find what was wrong. And he finally said on the last days, like, look, PJ, you know, I know this is our last day together and we've been working together for 4 months. I'm sorry that I haven't been able to fix this or take the pain away. He said, I've tried absolutely everything. I've worked with my my former instructors. I've worked with my mentors. I've consulted every book that I could find, every magazine article. He said, I talked to one of my mentors just recently and he said the only thing that he could think it would be is maybe your pelvis bone got popped out of place when you hit the concrete. He said, so I want to palpate your pelvis bone, which basically means pushing above the pubic line and seeing whether or not the left side of my pubic bone or pelvis bone and the right side of my pelvis bone were in alignment. Well, sure enough, they weren't. And so for 4 months, I suffered excruciating pain and limitations in my abilities because of that. And so finally, he's like, all right, this is not going to feel good, but I can make this happen. And I was like, let's do it. So he laid me on my left side, and it was my right pelvis bone that was out, and he popped that sucker back into place, and I was like, ah! Eyes rolling back in the back of my head, trying to escape.
Yeah, pelvis is no joke.
Oh, man, he popped that sucker back into place, but I'll tell you what, that was a pain I would live through every single day if I could have the release that I had after that. Immediately, it was like all of the pain was gone. All of the suffering was gone, and what was left was this amazing sense of gratitude and appreciation for a life that I had lost or thought that I had lost. I immediately was pain-free, and I immediately was feeling this great sense of, oh, my God, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is a level of gratitude that was so profound that it led me to understand what love really was. And that beam of light, that pillar of light that came through the ceiling and filled me up and said love was not about me learning to – or it was not about me teaching other people how to love. Well, it was not about me. It was about me teaching other people how to love, but it was about me learning to love myself. Because, Scott, I might have liked myself when I was a kid or most of myself, but I didn't like my disability. And that was a big struggle for me in high school and college. Even though I still lived a great life, snow skiing, water skiing, you know, sailing, wheelchair sports, traveling, martial arts, I was still living a great life, but I didn't like my disability. And so the moment that he popped that hip back into place, for the next few months, I had this overwhelming sense of gratitude and appreciation for months. And when you have appreciation, people think appreciation and gratitude are the same thing, and they're not. Appreciation, when you look at the root of it, it means to appraise something, which means to set a value for something, which means to determine something that you like or don't like, and how much do you like it and how much do you dislike it. And gratitude is the expression outward of thankfulness, yes, of appreciation,
that,
right?
So, that was my episode yesterday. I defined for people, like, if you just Google gratitude, it's like, yes, it's not just being thankful, it's the quality of being thankful. And then they actually put on there the readiness to show appreciation for and to return the kindness. It's, yes, yes, everything you're saying.
Yeah, so you know, when you get so filled up with appreciation, when you're so filled up with stuff that you love and like in life, and you're just welled up with it, it spills out. The moment it spills out, it becomes gratitude. Grateful for somebody, grateful for yourself, grateful for God, whatever you want to say, you become grateful. You have that expression outwards. Now, when you have that overwhelming sense of gratitude, right, when you fill up with gratitude and you're expressing so much gratitude, it naturally becomes love. And so this whole process of me getting hit by the SUV and thrown out into traffic and suffering the pain and then having the pain released was an opportunity for me to realize, hey, little man, you haven't actually been loving yourself. And so it's time for you to learn to love yourself so that you can help other people learn to love themselves. You know, I was not living authentically to my names.
This is crazy, man, because like right in this moment right now, I'm like, you think that would have kicked in when the vehicle came to a stop before running over your hip? Like that was that message you put out to the universe as you were in the air, mm-hmm, and you achieved that goal, right? You landed.
Yes.
Granted, you jacked your hip up, but you landed. It didn't run over your hip, so technically that goal was achieved. That should have been that point of, you know, explosive appreciation, gratitude, thankfulness, etc. Because you put the message out there and you got that, but that wasn't enough. You still hadn't been fully, I don't know, broken through, so to speak. You didn't break through yet. It's crazy how the physical act of putting your hip back into place, mm-hmm, was that next level. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Well, you know, it's important to suffer, right? And so people, Buddha says that pain is inevitable and suffering is an option, right? And back in the 80s, there was that great Levi's commercial where you see these people jumping up and down on their beds and jumping up and down and trying to put their pants on. And
I'm an 80s
finally
kid.
They get their pants on and they say, there's something great about struggling. And there is something great about the struggle, right? There is something great about the suffering because it allows you to appreciate the opposite extreme of that. And so suffering and struggling drives you forward and pushes you forward. Nothing causes you to be more attentive than pain or pleasure. And sometimes we need the pain and the suffering so we can look at ourselves and say, crap buckets, I do not like who I am. I do not like where I am. I do not like what I am. I do not like the relationship or how I'm showing up in the relationship. I don't like the job that I'm in. I don't like. And this is okay, because when you don't like something, now you can drive forward and find what it is that you want. Michelangelo, when asked, Hey, how do you know what to carve out of that stone? My man Mike said, shoot, dog, I don't. I just chip away what doesn't belong,
nice.
Right? He actually said, I don't. I carve away what isn't art, right? Meaning that he cuts away the pieces that don't work. Pain only works temporarily. Use it to drive you forward towards something that you want more, right? We can look at life in one of four ways. Our movement happens in one of four ways. We move away from pain. But we don't necessarily have a goal in a direction. We're just like, that hurts, I'm trying to get away. We can move towards pleasure. The problem with that is we forget all the lessons of the past. We're like, forget it, whatever, it doesn't even matter. I'm just letting everything go. I'm just moving towards pleasure. That can be a little bit hedonistic sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Right? And self, really kind of focusing only on yourself. And we don't live independently, really. We live interdependently.
Yeah, to live is to serve. To serve is
right,
to live.
Right. Yes, yes, beautifully put. I love that. Yes. And so then there's also moving towards pleasure and away from pain, where we're like, you know what? I want that more than I want this pain, which is really important. And then there is, oh my God, this hurts so bad. I want to get away from the pain and I want to find some pleasure. So moving away from pain and towards pleasure, right? And there's nothing wrong with any of these, but the one that seems to make the most sense for me is, what is it that you want? And what is it that you don't want? So let's say, look, I want that, and I don't really like this stuff that's going on back here. So how do I let go of what I don't like to move forward towards what I do want?
You know, I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people, is there's a fear of letting something go and letting a lot of things go. And this goes on over and over again. I mean, even I still suffer with that. It's like, you know, we're all trying to be mentors and coaches as we develop ourselves to the next level of a being. But these are all those struggles that everybody who's actually being truthful with themselves should be struggling with. It's hard to let things go, to be able to move on.
It is, but it's also really easy. The release is what's really important. The problem is that because we don't know what or how, we don't know what comes next, we don't know how to release, right? And that's the real problem. Is so it's a matter of retraining our brain. But before we retrain our brain, let's say, hey, you know what? What don't I like? And what do I want differently? And if you say, well, I don't know what I like. I know what I don't like, but I don't know what I do want. Okay, well, that's fine. But the universe abhors a vacuum. And so we can get you to release and let go. And we can get you to a place where you get to start fresh and clean and then start to explore and experiment with some of the things that you want and you might like. And that's beautiful, because that's the idea of being reborn in a manner of speaking, right? That all of a sudden you come back online and you're like, wow, look at all these options because I've let go of all this pain and suffering. That's absolutely beautiful for the exploration part. But if you really want fast action, let's determine what is it that I want, and now let's determine, okay, this is what I want, and be specific about it. Now let's say, okay, what's in my way? What's stopping me? And so releasing becomes fun at that point, because you know what you're exchanging something for. You know, a lot of people talk about sacrifice, and I don't believe in sacrifice. What I do believe in is a willing exchange of something that I might like for something that I want more.
You know,
right?
The pause on that exact point, like I'm literally, as I'm listening to you, because I want to be here in the moment, I have this going on in my head, and it's like, I'm always constantly going back to the firefighting when I left the corporate world and in 09, and then made that commitment to do that in 2010 and 2011. And a lot of people are like, man, that's such a huge sacrifice. Are you sure you're ready for it? And I love the way you just put that, because literally it's just spinning in my head. I'm like, I have to get this two-week conversation with him right now in this moment that you're expressing, because... Mm-hmm. That was the wake-up call that I can now look back years later, and I'm kind of going back over this and realizing that is like, yeah, for some people and even myself, maybe back then I saw it as, hey, let me sacrifice. Let me give everything away. Let me fit my life into a car and go work in public service for a couple of years and see if that's what I meant to do the rest of my life. And I did that. And giving myself to the bigger picture and serving in public service and trying to save lives. And you know, obviously Rich Brocchini, and he really helped have a lot of conversation with me as well. And like, dude, you need to own that stuff. Cause I was calling myself an ex firefighter. And he's like, no man, you're a former firefighter. Don't ever take that away from your story. But I think that's something you're talking about here is like, I didn't necessarily sacrifice. All I did was find a way to give more of myself into a different lifestyle for a period of time, which that was just my next step. And I had to embrace those fears because at that time that was like, that's a scary move, dude. Like I chose to go be a hotshot based in Arizona, by the way. So, cause I used to get on Tucson all the time. So we were outside of Payson, Arizona, north of Phoenix. And dude, that's a, you guys got a dangerous section of the country. Everybody thinks California's the worst for wildfires. And no, nah, man, Arizona, New Mexico's got it.
But we're pretty dry out here. It's true.
I mean, what is your observation on that? I mean, in my life cycle of going up and farming, working hard, then getting into the corporate world, working hard to chase the money, realized that didn't work. Then me trying the firefighting thing, because I think that was me just, you know, I was already into my 30s. And I was like, dude, I just never, I felt like I had to challenge myself. And to some of my friends and even myself, I thought maybe that was just me exercising my adrenaline junkiness. But right. I'm guessing it was more than that. It was me trying to figure out who the hell I am and where I was trying to go in life.
Yeah, and don't you think that part of wanting to know when you're a good man, part of being a good man is that we want to do for other people. We want to provide for other people. You know, people sometimes give this hero complex a bad name, but I think that the hero complex is really beautiful. I think it's one of the great things about masculinity is the idea that, hey, I want my life to matter, right? And maybe I'm wrong, but tell me, why did you join it? I mean, was it because you wanted your life to matter? Did you want to make a difference? Did you want to help in some way?
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, the years prior to that, I had been getting more and more into charity work. A wonderful woman locally here got me to help her with her cancer fundraising charity. Shout out to Natalie Miller if she ever listens to this show.
Natalie Miller!
She was the one who, she's like, I was literally drinking a martini in her restaurant at the bar, and she's like, you need to show up and help me with my charity. And I was like, oh, okay. And that led to me eventually running her website. This is years ago when I was going back, and that, you know, I eventually went back to school for the marketing psychology, and then I got involved with Habitat for Humanity, and it just kept increasing. And now years later, I will always keep doing some kind of charitable work throughout the year. And that was the firefighting, I think, was just my opportunity to say, you know, what if I took that full bore? Maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. And yeah, the adrenaline junk in me was like, well, what's the hardest wildland firefighter position out there? And you're either a smoke jumper who skydives in, or you're a hotshot that has to hike into the mountains. So I was like, boom. I'm like, okay, well, I love skydiving, but it's even harder to get into that position because I had zero firefighting background. And I actually landed a job as a hotshot with no firefighting background, which is very hard to do, but I'm really good at interviewing. So I was like, you know what? It is what it is. The universe aligned and they gave me that opportunity. And I told that superintendent I was going to give him 110%, you know, for the next 2 years if he gave me a shot. And I committed to that. So
how did it change your life? Like, oh, when man. You look back on it, how did it change you? And well, what were you satisfied with the movement?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's funny when I think it back, cause I'm going to put this into a book. I've decided that Rick talked to me about that. And a few other people like, dude, just, you got some crazy stories. It sounds like you got to write this stuff down. And that was something I took away from obviously our Thrive event and Lewis Howes and everybody else on stage. And it's like, I just got to start writing. But yeah, that was a part of it was just, man, like it's such a risk. Yeah, I'm risking my life. I think I underestimated that piece. I talked about that in my podcast episode this morning because I don't think I really thought about the impact to my closest friends and my family when I went and did that. Maybe that was a level of selfishness to myself. And at the time, I'm like, you know what? I'm committed. I'm doing this. I was like, as soon as I was finishing my degree on nights and weekends, just to prove, because I was be the first person in my family to have a degree. And I was like, I need to finish this. You know, this has got to be done before I go do anything else crazy. And I said, all right, I'm in because this is dangerous. This is going to, I don't know what's going to happen. And I think I just saw that as like, plus I had never really lived out west and I've always wanted to live out west. So it was just so many things. I'm like, just freaking go for it, man. And if you end up falling in love with it and this is what you're supposed to do the rest of your life, great. And if not, that's okay too. And that was scary for me. I think that was part of it, was that there were so many different ways of defining this and a level of fear. And I didn't know how to calculate all that. So I was just like, that's it. I'm all in. I mean, I've done mountain bike races. I've jumped out of planes. I'm like, I've been a ski race coach for years. I like to go fast. I like to push the envelope. So I was like, what the hell, man? This is the next level. So maybe that was my adrenaline junkie initially leading. But I think underlining all that was there was a shitload of fear. I mean, I don't know how else better to put that.
And did that fear drive you? What stopped you from, because a lot of people, when they experience fear, they stop taking action. So what drove you? Why did you keep moving, even despite the fear?
You know, because I believe fear is temporary. Mm-hmm. And it's like when I ran my first marathon in 08, that was my first like mental wall. They talk about that wall at like mile 20 or 21. And it's legit. That stuff exists. Like, so, and I channeled that experience. So when I went to go for firefighting, I was like, when I went to the academy, I'm like, I'm going to finish top of my class in the physical, you know, training, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, the fear was there. But then I also realized, like, Scott, everything you've done, you're not always going to do it perfect, but you'll eventually get better at it. And it's going to get better and better and better. And also, since I was in my 30s, I'm like, dude, you got to show up. And there was a lot of, like, I was considered the old guy on the crew. At 32. I'm like, really, dude? Like, I'm 32. But they usually hire like 18 to 24 out of high school, college kids, you know, they're there to work hard for the summer because they're moldable in development. And that was something I challenged myself with the superintendent too. And I struggled with that because I had been in management, you know, I'd managed 20, 30 person teams in the business world. And I was like, oh, you know, I literally had to check myself at the door many times my rookie year because I was used to being the boss. And it's like, guess what? You're just a digger. Go dig in the dirt, man. Go cut a fire break because you're the government monkey. So I don't know how to properly answer your question, man. It was just a matter of like, you know what? There was fear at first. And then I said, this is how you're going to grow. You know, you got to embrace the suck. That's a quote that I like to live by too, man. Just embrace the suck because it was painful. It was the most physically exhausting job that I've ever done in my life. The first 2 weeks of firefighting, I showed up and the squad boss, one of the Native Americans, actually, indigenous people, he's like, listen, man, he's like, you're going to do CrossFit 2 workouts a day for the next 14 days. And I'm like, what the hell is CrossFit? And now I'm a CrossFit coach years later. I teach it to other people. It's a part of my life since 2010. I absolutely love it. But after like the first 2 days, my body was beat down. Like, I mean, they literally, just like the military, man, they break you down to build you up. And that was something that I learned from that every single day. It's like, you're in pain, you're exhausted, you work 16 hours in the fire line, but it's like, they're breaking you down to build you up because this is no joke, man. You got to be all in 110% because you got other people here that are depending on you. And if you check out, you're risking the lives of every other guy or girl on that crew. It was a whole different world, man. I didn't have that responsibility in the corporate world. It wasn't the same level.
Not at all. It's never the same level in corporate America, you know, and the primal brain doesn't really understand that. That's why people get afraid and stop movement over silly things that, you know, people that are doing things that could kill them, that could take their life.
Well, police, right? Fire, military, that's the other part of my answer to you. That was something that I just didn't understand. It was always in the back of my mind. I'm like, what is this brotherhood, this sisterhood, this camaraderie? And it was something that I admitted to my girlfriend recently was like, you know, when I went to go do that, back in 2001, I was in the corporate world, I was working my way up, and 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
And our company, I was working for T-Mobile back then, managing in their call centers. And I wanted to be there. You know, I wanted to do more, but I didn't have the capabilities yet. So we as a company, we were setting up generators and everything else. But I'm like, I was like, I need to be in the thick of it. And it's just something that never left me. You know, it took 9 years to make that transformation and finally, you know, embrace the suck, so to speak, and take that risk. But it was always something like, man, like, what is that? I want to learn that. I want to be a part of that. Like, and admittedly, to our listeners, and you can talk to this as a coach who's only who understands love and relationship. It's like, you don't have to do what I did.
Right.
You know,
right.
You don't have to go and become a firefighter or a military person or a police officer. That's something now, right, years later I've realized. It's like, yeah, I now understand it firsthand, that brotherhood, that sisterhood, that family that you don't get in a traditional business role. But who's to say we can't create that same connection, mm-hmm, and that same act of belonging? I don't know. How do you speak to that?
So let me ask one more question, if I can.
Yeah.
When you first started and they threw you on the line where you're digging ditches, right?
Yeah.
And you were like, okay, I'm going to push through this. I know I'm just a government monkey, whatever it is that you want to say. I'm just going to keep pushing, right? Was that ego? And it's okay to say yes.
You know,
were you
at first?
Were you testing
it was like, dude, we're finally on a job, so to speak. It wasn't there was like training, but then it was like when we were finally assigned to the first fire, it was like there was a mix of excitement. Mm-hmm. There was also a mix of responsibility. It's like, all right, man, like this is what we've been training for. Like you got to show up. And yeah, there was definitely a percentage of, you know, F yeah, man. Like I'm a hot shot.
Yep.
but all of our squad bosses were there to make sure they put us in check and be like, listen, man, this is only the first fire. This fire is nothing. You've seen nothing yet. He's like, until you're staring down a wall of flames, which we don't ever want to put you in that position, but God forbid it may happen. You know, you just don't know. And like, so they were always the guys who actually were doing this their entire lives. They had no problem giving us that wake up call. I'm like, dude, you don't know. So as soon as I had the chance to maybe get a little ego, bam, they just smacked me right back down along with all of us. So I was like, all right, it was a great developmental journey. There was no room for ego. That was something they taught us. They said, guys, there's no room for ego, man. This is too risky of a job. There's too many lives on the line. Not even the innocent citizens. It's the people that you're risking your life with, your crew. It's like there was a whole different level of team building that I used to, you know, teach people team building in the business world. And I was like, this is a whole different level. So yeah, there was no room for ego, man. As soon as it came in, it was like perfect timing. I don't know how they did it. They'd smack it right back out of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's really critical. And when people ask me like, well, why do you do what you do? Why don't you quit? You know, why don't you use a manual or an electric wheelchair? And I will say, honestly, the truth is, because of my ego. And really, I would say the truth of why you joined in that initial like powerhouse, like, okay, we're doing this, right? There is some ego in there.
Oh God, but yeah. There was like, hey man, there was a percentage of bragging rights. Like, dude,
I was
a hot shot.
Yes. And look, like I'm not negating what they were saying. I'm actually about to support what they're saying. So we use people, so many people are meditating nowadays, which is fantastic. And we really need to get more people meditating. The more people that meditate, the healthier and happier the world will be. And the healthier and happier your individual life will be, which is really important. And it's beautiful. And you have more kindness and love and patience and compassion to give to other people. And that's super, super beautiful. One of the important things, though, is that we can use our ego to drive us in a direction we want. I don't want to be seen as disabled. I don't want to be seen as weak. I don't want to be seen as not capable. I'm a man who's 4 feet tall in my wheelchair, 5'1", maybe if I could stand up, super, super skinny. I'm 75 or 85 pounds, right? I'm not very big.
Dude, you're a bigger man than most men that I've met in the fire and the CrossFit world. I'm going to tell you that right now. I mean, just the fact that only through my own self-development, I've realized the power of love and passion, and you embrace that more than most men that I've ever met. And I was like, dude, this guy deserves so much respect. That's not even funny.
Thank you, man. I really am honored by that. Thank you. And the truth is that I have found a way to use my ego to drive me forward. And then once the ego has served me, I begin to let it go and come back to that place of humility and move with that movement of love and kindness and generosity, because that's my true core. That's my true essence. But ego is also a tool to get you in motion. If you don't want something, if you don't want to be seen in a particular way, how do you want to be seen? And allow that ego to drive you in that direction. Just like you, it drove you to becoming a hotshot. But then when they realized, hey, this ego could actually get you killed or get somebody else hurt, that's when they smack it out of you. So that's the important piece, right? Mm-hmm. Is use the ego to drive you forward, but then the moment that the ego starts to think that it's in control, get rid of it. That's the meditation. That's the slapping it out of you. That's the humility and the humbleness that life will give you. That's important. It's a tool. Use it as it's directed to get you in motion and to make you become a better human being, and then let it go. Find a way to release it again.
And I think that's powerful what you're saying here, because it's funny because I read over your site multiple times this week to get ready because I was so excited. And a lot of your, like a piece of your wisdom, you know, PJ's wisdom, again, guys, pjswisdom.com, is you talk about it's not all peace, love, and persistence stuff. But what you're just talking about, when they smack that ego out of you, the reason why it was so dangerous is the psyche is powerful. Yeah. And if you get so much ego, yeah, you actually become dangerously complacent. And that was a big piece of our training, was complacency. Mm-hmm. When you become complacent, you become absent-minded, you become distracted, and you lose focus. And like in the middle, I still have a vision board to this day. I literally just moved it in my office this morning because I wanted it like right now as I'm talking to you on the microphone. I look up and there's a giant blurry photo in the middle of it. And in the center of the word, it's in full clarity. It just says focus in a bright fire red. And that's why I put it up there, because that was what could literally save or destroy lives to us, which was the power of not basically fighting that complacency. And I think to what you coach and what you speak to, and why so many, especially as men, you know, as manly men, you know, we're like, how hard is it for us to show the vulnerability of, you know, being peaceful and showing true love and all of those components that for years as a younger guy growing up in the Irish family and stuff, I saw that as weakness.
I mean, you know, I think it's brilliant also, if I can borrow your word again, that you said that when we become too arrogant or we become too filled with that ego, too egotistical, that we become complacent. I have literally watched people that I love very much become complacent in their relationships because they have too much ego in the relationship, or at least from an outside perspective. They have too much ego in the relationship that causes them to think that, no, this is the way it is. I'm right. I'm not changing. And the problem is that when there's no flexibility, you know, then there's no real opportunity for growth in that particular area. You can grow in every other area of your life, but that one particular area, as long as that ego is there, past driving you into a point where you want to be, right, it becomes an anchor that chains you to the ground.
And it holds you back in everything in life. Mm-hmm. And this is why, I mean, not to dwell on divorce, but I've never been engaged. I've never been married yet. And I see it over and over again. And I am not anywhere near the level of, and I pardon this use of word guru, but compared to me, you are a guru, that I have a lot of experience speaking to. But I'm at least taking this time to do the self-work over the past, really the 2 years especially, because like my current girlfriend and I took a 3-month break, or we did, because I was being a jackass and my head was up my ass. I say it how it is. But that was me allowing that ego to come back in, but also holding myself back. Once I had moved back here, I wasn't willing to embrace life to the fullest. I kept saying, oh, look at all my adventures. And yeah, I got all these photos on Facebook. And yeah, I've done all this crazy adrenaline junkie stuff, you know, stuff at your level. And it's like, but that's not what life's all about. Am I truly living life to the fullest? I've always held myself away from love. I never was willing to open that vulnerability. That wall was always up. I was never in a deep, loving relationship. Mm-hmm. And I realized that wasn't the women that I met. That was me. That was my ego, mm-hmm, of not willing to unlock that piece of myself. And I realized bigger picture was like, dude, you're a hypocrite. You're not living life to the fullest. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've come across many other people besides me that have struggled with the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times we are afraid, right? That ego can drive us forward or can hold us back, and fear causes us not to commit completely. And that's really important. We always want to be able to commit fully and completely. And, you know, I have also had commitment issues in the past. And I realized that a lot of it was because I always was thinking there was something better around the corner. And the problem with thinking that there's something better around the corner is you're never present, right? And I think, I don't know, was it Bob Dylan that said, if you can't be with the one that you love, love the one you're with?
I think you're right. I'm terrible at music, but I mean, that one's pretty classic.
Right. Well, you know, again, an homage to my dad today on his birthday, because he was a huge Dylan fan, right? Mm. So that's really important. So, and I'm not talking like accepting what you don't have, but rather really truly appreciating what you do have in the moment, because the only thing that we have truly is the moment, the presence and the awareness of the present moment, and the five senses that we come with: sight, smell, taste, sound, touch, and then let's go six, right, with the emotional component in there. And so when we really say, you know what, I'm going to make a full-on commitment, then we have an opportunity to really taste life in ways that we've never tasted it, to hear the sounds and the conversations and the love or the intonation in the sound of another person's voice, right? To feel appreciated and to feel a sense of appreciation. And it comes back to, how much am I willing to commit to the present moment? And if I can commit to the present moment, what am I committing to the present moment? My heart, my mind, my sense of sight, smell, touch, all my five senses. When we commit to the present moment, then we can enjoy the person that we're with or the people we're with, because we're not thinking, God, I'd rather have something better around the corner or what's next door. You know, that's a problem, because we're never present. And that means we're always, always, always cheating ourselves. And it also means that we're literally looking for someone or something else to bring that sense of love and enthusiasm and excitement into our lives, instead of going out and saying, this is what I want and I'm going after it.
Man, I love that. That's ridiculous. It's so powerful. man, I've been so looking forward to this episode with you.
Thanks. Me too.
This is so, and not to change the subject, but I want to channel all this energy that you brought forth today. And from what we met at Thrive, and we kind of hinted about the tears on stage and the tears in the audience. And I don't want to skip over this, because I know you're constantly doing something important. And everything that you've done professionally, your speaking career, everything, it kind of seemed to me, as an outsider looking in, that you've always been building it to a bigger picture. Yes. And I wanted to give you the opportunity on this show also to make sure that we're honoring you as the co-host and getting the word out about all this work you've done with Pencils for Promise. So why don't we talk about that real quick? Because we have been chatting for a while. And I am about the bigger picture and charity and giving back and fundraising. And you've been crushing it, man. I mean, the power of that Thrive Make Money Matter event at the end of it, when Cole Hatter came out on stage, we threw you up on stage and we're like, all right, everybody, like, let's show. And I joked around and I did my social media sharing literally while that was happening. I was like, let's show the power of real life crowdfunding, right? This is beyond Kickstarters and Indiegogos and everything else. And that was so cool, because we helped you blast through that outstanding plateau that you've been trying to get through. Can you talk to some of that, like that struggle?
Absolutely. So in 2015, probably 2014, Cole had an idea to create an event called Thrive Make Money Matter, and then courageously he drove forward. And if people don't know who Cole is, you should really look this guy up. He is a true gentleman. He is a great dad. He's an amazing husband. He is a profound community leader. He donates a lot of his time and personal money to an orphanage that he has down in Mexico. He's been around the world donating time and money and building schools and homes and all of that for people. And so this is going to sound terrible, so forgive me, but there aren't very many people in the world who inspire me, right? And I mean, like, truly, like, deeply inspire me. But there are people that I'm motivated by, and I'm like, wow, that's really great. Like, that, like, what you're doing does inspire me, but it's like a kind of a lesser form, right? And so please
we need those people that are at that middle level tier. We need the motivation that's going to kind of keep giving us that trickle of energy throughout the year. But then you need those key players, man. Those rare gems, those rare diamonds in the rough. That sounds like Cole is. It's like that's the power right there. And you need them for those 1, 2, 3 events throughout the year, whatever it is going on, to give you the real power spike. But yeah, we still need those motivational people throughout the year as well.
Right. Absolutely. And so Cole is one more little piece about Cole. One, I remember seeing Cole on stage at Luke Unsworth's Life on Fire event, right?
Oh yeah, Nick.
And I sat. Yep, that's right. Sat right in the front stage. And Cole came out, and Nick had really been singing Cole's praises, so I was super excited to listen to Cole speak. And one of the things that I had been told, and I don't remember exactly where this came from, is that, and maybe I heard Cole say it on stage, is that a lot of people tithe, right, which is really great, 10% to their church or their religious organization or a charity somewhere around the world, which I think is beautiful. It's super important. But Cole's intent and mission is to be able to give away, to literally tithe 90% of his income. 90%, and he and his family live on 10%. Now, these are numbers that are a little bit like trying to understand how big the universe is for most people, right? When you go up and you look through a telescope and you're like, wait, that star is how far away?
Yeah.
Like how many light years away? And light travels how fast?
And the light we're seeing is basically from a dead star.
Yeah, like I can't even conceive of this. Like my mind explodes. It's the same way when you think about giving away 90% of your income and living on 10%. Cole's perspective is if you can't live on $100,000 a month, then there's absolutely no – you don't need that, right?
Right?
And I'm not trying to get into his finances, and forgive me, but I mean, he's said this on stage himself, right? He wants to make $1 million a month so that he can give away 90% of that. That is remarkable. That's inspiration for me. So I went to Thrive, super duper stoked in 2015, fell in love with the community, the tribe, literally the Thrive tribe was immediately formed. Adam Braun got up on stage and I said, why are we not doing that? Like, let's do that. Let's have Thrive 2015 build a school, and Thrive 2016, if they want to build a school, cool. And if they don't, if they want to get together and do something else, that's fantastic. And Thrive 2017, like, let's have a movement or a mission for them. What is theirs, right?
And real quick for our listeners, yes. Adam is?
Adam Braun, sorry, thank you. I thought I was coming back to that. Adam Braun is the founder of Pencils of Promise.
Awesome.
Okay, so Pencils of Promise, he came up, he spoke on stage, he talked about what Pencils of Promise does, which in essence, they build schools in developing countries around the world, Ghana, Guatemala, and Laos. And so I started building a school, and I reached, and I didn't want Cole to know. This was like going to be my super secret, right?
Nice.
So I started like reaching out to all the people that were the 300 or 400 people that were the first Thrive, and reaching out to them. And literally, I reached out so many times to people to say, "Hey, this is what I'm doing," that Facebook threatened to shut me down, and they basically said, "You cannot send any more Facebooks because we don't really believe that you are a human being at this point." And we think that you are soliciting. And I'm like, I am soliciting, but I am a human being.
Yeah, for charity,
too.
For giving back. I heard something about the story, but I didn't know it was actually Facebook's algorithms that were shutting you down. That's ridiculous.
Facebook was, they shut me down for a little while, and we finally got back online. Well, the point is I was able to raise $11,000, but it wasn't near the $25,000 that I needed.
Yeah.
And so in 2016, this year, we wanted to do something again. And I went to Cole and I said, Cole, if we're going to build another school, I have $11,000. We're already partway there, man. Why don't we use this money? So Cole was like, okay, that would be great. Puts me up on stage, and in under 15 minutes, I think you were tracking it. I think you said in something like 9 minutes.
Actually, I was literally sitting in the, because I was so pumped. I immediately went to the link, donated. And then I sat there, since I was already synced in, and just kept hitting refresh on my iPhone. So to be fair to your power and the power of Make Money Matter, it was 3 minutes.
Holy crap buckets. That's amazing.
Dude, it was ridiculous. I'm literally like, ding, 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 ding. I'm hitting refresh. I was like, did we just effing? Like, I'm turning to people next to me. I'm showing them the phone. I'm like, dude, like, I'm like whispering. Because like, you guys were on stage. I'm like, guys, look, we already freaking hit it.
We raised $18,006 with about 20% of the population or 20-25% of the population that could or was able to donate. You know, now this is not a commentary about the people who couldn't or didn't, because they've got their own thing going on in their community, and the Thrive Tribe is amazing, and so I don't have any hard feelings. But what I'm saying is we had, from 2015 to 2016, I had 206 entrepreneurs from around the world donate a total of $29,000. $29,000. Now, we needed $35,000 to build this school, okay?
Yeah.
And Cole literally got on stage. And again, kudos to Cole and his, like, the inspiration that he brings to me and everybody else. Cole said, these were his words, what we do not raise, I will cover the rest. What if we'd raised $1?
Oh, yeah.
He sat in front of 600 people and said he would cover the rest.
That was the best part. I'm sitting there, I was like, all right, then we need to get this rocking right now. As I'm sitting in the audience, I'm like, we got to make sure that, I mean, no matter what, you were golden. No matter what, you were getting the school. That was the most powerful piece. Once he said that, you were already in. But then that's why I kept hitting refresh, because I was like, wait a minute, I don't think we're going to need his money, because I'm hitting refresh and refresh and refresh. I'm like, dude, like, it's cruising already. And that's why I was like, holy crap, in 3 minutes, I was like, dude, we've already hit the 25,000 mark. And I think it ended up at like 28 something or whatever. I was like, whoa.
It's $29,000 even. Right after Thrive.
Yeah.
$29,000 even. And Cole and his wife honored their commitment and wrote a $5,600 check. $5,600. Now, they're humble and they didn't tell anybody, but I'm going to tell everybody because that is remarkable. I want people to be inspired. We can change the world, right? Collectively, 206, because I counted Cole, 206 entrepreneurs from around the world got together, raised $35,000 in truly a matter of minutes, right? Truly a matter of minutes, because even the people that I was reaching out through to in 2015, if you calculate the amount of time that it took for me to email and for them to donate the money, it's a matter of minutes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a matter of minutes, we raised enough money to build a school in Laos for what's going to potentially be thousands of children for the lifetime of the school. And look, these children are not just going to be impacted and affected. These children are going to impact their family. There are some of these are going to be the first ones to graduate. These are kids that are going to affect their community. These are kids that are going to grow up and affect the world. We are changing the world by making our money matter. And this is important. You don't have to donate a ton of money, but can you donate love?
Yeah.
Can you donate kindness? Can you donate muscle power? Is there something in the world you're passionate about?
And I've done every version of that. Like, that was the power of Habitat for Humanity, because I was back in school and I was laid off from a company. So I didn't have the money, but I had the muscle and I had the sweat and I had the experience. So that's why I worked with that organization. Like, it doesn't matter. People have to remind me, like, okay, if you have the dollar, give a dollar. But there's so many organizations that sometimes need the sweat equity. And there's a lot of strong, healthy people out there that can man or woman up and say, you know what, let's throw in some drops of sweat on this project.
And you know what, man? The most important piece is we've got to have the heart. We get to have the heart to make a difference in the area of the world that we want to make a difference. It could be your backyard. It could be your neighborhood. It could be your community.
Yeah.
It could be your neighbor.
Cole chose Mexico, right? He's got his school going on.
Yep. And I chose Laos because Laos is an area that really needs a lot of help. Ghana and Guatemala have a lot of assistance right now. And, you know, I studied the Asian culture when I was in college, and I've always been fascinated by it. So I wanted to be able to give.
There's so much history in the Asian culture, especially from your experience in martial arts and mine too. I mean, I learned from the Okinawan, you know, Japanese history, but it's the same. It doesn't matter. Like, I think that's a big picture here. A lot of us are nowadays, I don't want to go political, but people are all paranoid about we got to focus on our own country, which I agree. We sometimes get too involved in other areas. But if there's charitable organizations that are out there and they're getting structured, they're getting organized like Pencils of Promise, it's like, great, let's try and bring the whole planet up at the same time. And some countries are going to lead the way and some will be behind, but let's not leave anyone behind. Let's try and help everywhere we can, you know, within reason. So that's what you're doing.
Everybody holds the potential to make somebody's life different or better. Everybody has the potential to make somebody's life different or better. I don't care if that means you give a quarter to a homeless person on the street. I don't care if that means you see somebody who's not, doesn't look like they're having a good day, and you walk up behind them and you know, kind of come to their side and you say, "Hey, are you okay? You don't look like you're having a very good day." And they burst out into tears, right? Because someone is expressing some kind of care and concern for them, right? It doesn't matter. What matters is that you know who you are in your heart and what drives you and what are you passionate about and what do you believe in? What do you wish you could change? And if you know that there's something that you're like, "God, I really wish, or I really want to," that's where you get started. It doesn't matter where it is or who it's for. It matters that it speaks to you in your heart, because then what comes out is the truth of your soul, the truth of your connection. Everything is about reconnecting and coming back together. That's why we want to be in romantic relationships. That's why we want to hug. That's why we smile, because we want to be connected. That's why we move to cities, because we want to be with like people. That's why we find our tribe. That's why we play sports. Partially it's fun, but also because we really want to be connected to people who speak our language.
Camaraderie.
It's about, yes, it's about unity and oneness. My definition of love is the willing exchange of oneself for oneness. The willing exchange of oneself, meaning ego self, for oneness, meaning I'm in love with you, or I'm loving you, or I'm giving to you. Because what happens is there is this oneness when I'm giving or doing for another person and I'm loving. What happens is when in the process of love, you literally begin to forget about yourself and you just realize the only thing that exists is that love. You forget about who you are when you truly love, and you get so enamored and enraptured by the love that you don't know that you're not thinking about you. You just are aware of the love. That's oneness. To me, and I'm a pretty spiritual guy, so one of the most beautiful quotes is by a spiritual teacher of mine, Muji. And Muji was one time asked, "Muji, is God love?" And Muji said, "Where I have been, there is nothing. Love is the emanation. Love is the fragrance that emanates from the divine. Love is the fragrance that emanates from the divine. That's who you are. You are an expression of creation. You are an expression of the creator. And we all are this. And so when we love, all that is a magnetic experience of coming back together and rejoining this sense of an awareness of oneness and not separation, not two-ness, not duality, but non-duality. This is important. Follow that. Follow that love. Find that place where you feel like you want to give and do, and that's where your passion will blossom. That's where you'll find your sense of real value.
I love that point, because it's, they don't have to follow your mission, my mission.
No,
not I think the most important thing is people find, you have to dig deep into themselves, and it's okay if it means something to you and no one else, because as long as it means something to you, you're able to finally grow beyond yourself and you can find something that channels your energy to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And
right now, anybody who's listening, and maybe if you're willing, you could put up the link on this interview page.
Oh, dude, we do very detailed show notes. So anything we discuss today, everything gets linked. I give more than I get. So.
Well, fantastic. I love that. But what I was going to say is that, yes, we raised the $35,000, but I want to raise the $50,000 because I want these kids to have the best possible education they can. So with the additional $15,000, what happens is the school teachers get additional education. Pencils of Promise goes out and makes sure that they have working curriculum, and they get like additional resources, and it just, they get so much more from your $15,000 more. That's nothing. Like, that's the equivalent of about another, you know, if we just go with the basic math of the 206 people who donated the $35,000.
Yeah, we did that in less than 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, we're literally talking about like maybe another, you know, 70 or 80 people. if you want to, if you're like, you know what, I believe in education, I wouldn't be where I am if I, you know, if I didn't, wasn't educated, and I wouldn't be listening to Live the Fuel if I didn't want to be educated and want to be, make a different, an impact on the world. And so if you would like to help us raise the additional 15,000 so these kids don't just get an education, but they get a freaking awesome education and Lao, then please click on the link in the show notes and offer a little donation. And if we go over the 15,000, great, we'll just build another school. And this isn't where I'm stopping. I may not build schools the rest of my life.
We just keep going, baby.
Yeah, right, right. I may not be building schools the rest of my life, but what I can tell you is that in my very near future, one of the areas that's really important to me is helping women and children get out of the sex slave industry. Let's get them out of that, because to me, there's nothing more beautiful than the innocence of a child and the feminine nature, the innocent feminine nature of a woman, of femininity. I want women and children to be safe. I want that act of intimacy to mean something and be sacred, right? Because that's a prayer. So I don't want them to suffer. I want them to be in healthy, happy, loving relationships with friends, family, partners, parents, adopted parents. It doesn't matter to me. I don't want them to suffer, because there's almost nothing more horrible in the world than sex slavery and, you know, child abuse. There's almost nothing more horrible in the world than those things, because it steals away your connection. It steals away intimacy. It steals away your sense of value. And that is evil.
It's a pretty harsh world out there. And I want to thank you for bringing more of that messaging into it, because, again, you're doing so much with Pencils of Promise. And I think it's powerful that every time we hit another layer of you, we're finding a deeper layer, a bigger picture layer. Like, it seems like it's never ending. And I think that's a great lesson to all of us, is that, yeah, you got some short-term goals, you got some long-term goals, but then let's set what possibly could be unrealistic goals, because it may seem unrealistic now, but that can change. Like, did you ever expect to hit $35,170? Because I'm on your page right now. you hoped for it, and yes, you said it, and now you're there now. So, like, how far can we get now by the end of the year? And I can guarantee you, like, since we're recording this today, this is going to get blasted across all my Twitters and everything else today. And the cool thing is, your episode is going to be my final episode of 2016. So
yes,
you, your voice, our messaging today will be going out this Friday on the 30th. So New Year's Eve weekend, you will be our final message to close out the year. And 2017 is going to be another exciting year. And I'll keep on sharing your message, obviously. But I couldn't have asked for better timing. So as soon as you said yes, I'm like, okay, I got to figure out. Perfect. PJ's closing out 16.
I love that, man. I love that. And I hope that this has been a great message and a great interview for your audience. I hope they're really interested in it, because what I really want people to walk away with is, you have the power, right? Put your fist up in the air and jump up and down like you just don't care. You have the power. You have the ability to step up into your life in a way that makes an impact and changes people around you. When they look at you, you want to be doing things that inspire other people. And if you're quiet and shy and you just like want to listen, that's okay. You can do it from the side. You don't have to let everybody know. You can do it with a simple email that says, hey, I love you. Are you doing okay? Right? Just by demonstrating that you care. Start, though, by caring about yourself. Start, though, by loving yourself. Start by really identifying who you are and what you were born to do. And that may not have anything to do with an actual career. It may have something to do with a passion that you have, like painting, for example. Maybe you don't care what kind of job you have, but you just really want to paint. And what you paint maybe inspires other people to do that, because you've really delved deeply into that. It doesn't matter what other people think. What matters is what you were born to do. What do you hear? What is that voice that's inside of you that says, I really want to, I really want to, I really want to? I call it listening to your soul integrity. Soul integrity, S-O-U-L, but also S-O-L-E. What is the one thing that you're supposed to do? And maybe there's a multitude, and that's okay. But what's the one thing you need and want to do right now? If you could make the world a different place, including your world, what do you want to be doing differently right now, or better right now? And let's start there. It may be, I'm not happy with my job. It may be I want to be a better man. It may be I want to be a better mom. It may be I want to be a better son. Or, you know what, I want to raise money to build a school through Pencils of Promise also. Or it may be, gosh, you know what, I'm really scared, but I've always wanted to do a podcast, but I don't know how. Reach out to Scott and find out. Let Scott help you get where you want to go. People want to help people. You're not alone in this world. Even if you feel alone sometimes, the truth is someone out there loves you and wants to love you and wants to see you succeed. And you'd be surprised how many of those people actually exist.
Well, there you go, Live the Fuel fans. Normally, I have to ask our co-hosts to create the final words of the episode because I want them to be the closing notes. Well, he's already done that. So that's PJ Dixon, guys. Like, this guy was meant to close the episode because he already knew this. I didn't have to even say the words. So again, pjswisdom.com. Again, Pencils of Promise. The campaign will be linked in livethefuel.com on his episode number 36 to close out 2016. If you guys listened to this entire 90-minute episode, our longest one yet because it was so powerful, thank you for hitting play and pause to help come back and listen to this episode. Thank you. Please follow this messaging. Please follow PJ Dixon on Facebook. Please check out his website, pjswisdom.com. Again, guys, if you have a little extra something for the end of the year, let's really punch this Pencils of Promise campaign through. This will be airing this Friday. So again, to our listeners, keep living a fired up epic life. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.